Local news, culture, and NPR.
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, the federal government shutdown enters its sixth day today, with both sides seemingly entrenched. What does that mean for Sullivan County? We talk with John Little, Sullivan County's Health and Family Services Commissioner, about what's at risk, from safety nets to essential services, and how local government is bracing for impact. It's an inside look at what Washington's gridlock means for you on your doorstep. Plus, local economic perspective from James B. Huntington. Janice Adams is kicking off season 10 of the Janice Adams Show at a new time today. And from Sinatra to Woodstock, tell us Alex Prisgentis is bringing classic hits and music history to life with his electric cello. He joins Classical Kit to talk about it right after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. A federal judge has blocked President Trump a second time from trying to deploy National Guard troops to Oregon. Steve Futterman reports the two rulings block the deployment of Oregon and then California National Guard troops.
The move by the Trump administration comes after a federal judge, a Trump appointee, blocked deployment of Oregon National Guard troops. Sunday night, the same judge blocked the attempt to use the California Guard troops, saying it was an attempt to circumvent her order. California Attorney General Rob Bonta.
This move is the latest example of Trump's blatant and repeated overreach of power.
Oregon has been fighting any deployment of troops. For NPR News, I'm Steve Futterman in Los Angeles.
Separately, President Trump is calling up hundreds of National Guard troops from Texas. He's deploying the Texas troops to Illinois against the wishes of Illinois officials. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker says Trump's deployment of National Guard troops to different states, even though local officials don't want them, should be called, quote, Trump's invasion. This is the sixth day of the federal government shutdown. Republican lawmakers want Democrats to agree to a short-term spending bill. Democrats want Republicans to agree to rescind some of their cuts to federal health care spending. NPR's Deepa Shivaram says the Senate is expected to meet and vote today on another spending plan, but it's not likely to succeed.
There hasn't been any movement towards any kind of agreement or common ground over the weekend. So while the Senate is getting together today, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson isn't convening the House. He says that he won't call in his own members until Senate Democrats agree to reopen the government.
NPR's Deepa Shivaram reporting. Despite the shutdown, the U.S. Supreme Court is opening its new session today. The justices have rejected an appeal from the former girlfriend of late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Ghislaine Maxwell has argued she should not have been convicted for her role in any of Epstein's actions. Stocks opened mixed this morning on news of another big computer chip deal. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 260 points in early trading.
Chipmaker AMD has reached an agreement to supply high-performance chips to the artificial intelligence startup OpenAI. The deal is expected to generate tens of billions of dollars in revenue for AMD, while also allowing OpenAI to accelerate its data processing build-out. OPEC and its allies have announced a modest boost in oil production. Starting next month, the cartel will pump an extra 137,000 barrels a day. Retail gasoline prices in the U.S. are down. And for the second time in about a week, there's a big recall on corn dogs. This one covers nearly 4 million pounds of chicken corn dogs sold by Foster Poultry Farms. Last week, Hillshire Brands issued a similar recall. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now down 280 points. This is NPR. The Utah legislature is set to meet in special session today. One item is a redistricting issue. A state judge struck down a prior Utah congressional map, saying lawmakers had disregarded the intent of voters. This redistricting effort has been underway in Utah for several years. Just hours after naming the members of his government, France's newest prime minister has resigned. He's the fourth to go in a little over a year. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports his resignation has shocked the nation and plunged France into an even deeper political crisis.
Sébastien Lecornu stepped down, saying he could not work in such a divided parliament, where no party has an outright majority, but each is pushing for its entire program to be adopted. The far right and left control the biggest voting blocks, but there is no agreement on how to lead France out of its massive debt crisis. Different party leaders are also posturing for position just a year and a half ahead of a presidential election where Emmanuel Macron cannot seek another term. Speaking to The Nation, the newly resigned Lecornu said France could succeed if there was less ego, more humility, and a spirit of compromise.
Mais faut toujours préférer son pays.
You must prefer your country to your party, he said. Listen to your base, of course, but put the French people first. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
This year's Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine has been awarded to three scientists, Americans Mary Brunko and Fred Ramsdell, and Japan's Shimon Sakaguchi. They're being honored for work discovering how the body's immune system is regulated so it does not attack our organs. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Drexel University, whose cooperative education program positions students to explore future careers before graduation. This is experiential education. More at drexel.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. The federal government remains closed today amid a bitter impasse on Capitol Hill over competing congressional spending bills, one backed by each party. The Senate is scheduled to reconvene this afternoon to put the bills to a vote. How is the federal government shutdown affecting public health, social services, and families right here in Sullivan County? With me is John Little, Commissioner of Health and Family Services for Sullivan County. He oversees public health, social services, mental health, and more. We're going to talk about what services are vulnerable, what the county is doing to prepare, and how residents can stay informed and protected during this uncertain time. John, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tim.
So let's jump in. How has your department been affected so far by the government shutdown?
So we actually haven't seen a whole lot impact us immediately from the government shutdown. Our eyes are more on how long this is going to last, because if we get through the end of October without a resolution, then the impacts can become pretty significant.
And so what signs are you watching for as the debate continues on Capitol Hill?
So what's most interesting, I think, as you follow from a policy perspective, is the push and pull with regard to Medicaid and Medicare. And so a lot of those changes are being discussed, in the national media. And it's something that we're looking very closely at, because there were significant cuts to to Medicaid established in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, potentially 1.6 million essential plan enrollees and 140,000 enrollees in qualified health plans in New York could lose their coverage. So that's something that we know congressional Democrats are trying to put back into the congressional spending legislation. But that's, that it certainly remains to be seen. What we know is coming is changes to the SNAP program, which is currently funded through the month of October, but we have no indication yet on whether or not November benefits will be paid. And we know there is no money in the Home Energy Assistance Program unless there is a continuing resolution or a spending bill passed by the Congress. So we plan for HEAP to start at its normal time on November 1st, but if we don't have a spending bill out of Washington, then that program is going to be on hold as well.
Are those the lines in your budget that are most vulnerable to delayed or frozen funding, the public health and social services?
Yeah, that's what we see. I mean, fortunately, a lot of our work day to day is state and local funded. So, there's no risk that the county public health department or social services is going to be closing our doors anytime soon. It's really where we rely on federal funding to provide benefits that I'm most concerned about and that we're keeping a closest eye on right now.
Some populations are more at risk during these funding gaps or transitions. Who in Sullivan County do you expect could be hardest hit if things don't resolve themselves by perhaps end of month?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think the poorest people are going to be the ones who suffer the strongest impact first. And like I said, that comes from the SNAP program, which again is funded through the month of October. So those benefits are getting paid out for this month. The Home Energy Assistance Program, we were already expecting to see cuts. where we wouldn't be able to provide home energy repairs and clean and tune this year because of funding not being at levels it has been in years past. But right now, there's no funding authorized at all for that program until we have a new federal budget. So that's the one that really concerns me most as the as we start to head into winter weather.
Are there local, state, or even private resources or contingency plans that you could call upon to help fill any temporary gaps?
Yeah, fortunately, we have a lot of support. You know, we call it United Sullivan project that I started with my team a few years ago. And we're able to make, you know, referrals through our Unite Us system. And with that, you know, we can connect folks to, you know, charitable resources, whether that be from local agencies like Catholic Charities, Action Toward Independence, Federation for the Homeless, and so on and so forth. So, but those groups are also under stress from, you know, disruption and instability in the federal budget planning. So, it's something that we as agencies talk about. At least on a weekly basis, we get together every Thursday and talk through what's going on with each other and each other's issues and funding and plans and events. So there's a lot of collaboration and ability to assist. But again, it's a stressful and unstable time, to say the least, for funding.
If we get to that point in the next month or two where there is a longer delay in funding, how do you inform the public about any service changes or delays or alternatives?
Well, I certainly appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about it and work with other local media partners. Sullivan County government, fortunately with Dan Hoost as our director of communications, has a very robust social media presence. And so, you know, we will be keeping folks informed as we go. I've been reading from my notes to you, to my briefing, to the legislature coming up later this month. So we'll be keeping them informed that way via public meetings. So we'll be doing our best to keep folks informed as the situation evolves.
And we'll be sure to talk to Dan every Friday, as we do here in his regular appearance, about the status of things. Looking beyond this current moment, are there steps that local governments can take to build resilience so services are less vulnerable to these seemingly more often federal shutdowns?
Well, I mean, that's certainly it's certainly something that we're looking at to see what we can do. And, you know, it's really, I think volunteerism and community support is really important. It's always been important, but I think especially in the realm of hunger and food insecurity, is we've seen much more of a need for that in spite of the economy doing well. And because we have seen changes in how food is provided to regional food banks and, you know, how that trickles down then to local food pantries, anything folks can do to support their local food pantries, whether it's volunteering, donating time, donating food, donating cash. Those are certainly things that will help if federal money is not coming our way. And of course, that's probably our most important priority, is making sure families can put food on the table.
Well, on a personal note, you and your staff are on the front lines. How do you support them and maintain morale and continuity during this uncertainty?
Yeah, I mean, it's always difficult because we talk, especially in my primary department is social services. And so, you know, we talk often about how when folks come to us, you know, they're not coming to us on their best day. Certainly they're coming to us because they have a really serious need. So, it's very rewarding work, even though it may be stressful from time to time. And so we just reinforce that with each other that, you know, we treat everybody with dignity, courtesy, respect. We make sure that we treat each other with dignity, courtesy, and respect. And we acknowledge that, you know, the work that we have to deal with is stressful. And when someone needs to take time for themselves, you know, we encourage that. We, and, you know, we just, we have a picnic every year, with my folks that we, the management team contributes money to it. It's not taxpayer funded, but we do things like that, to just let folks know that we care about them. Every once in a while, the commissioner will walk through the offices with a box of ice cream sandwiches, whatever it takes. We're here to help. We're not going anywhere, and we're proud to do what we do.
Before we go, what's one piece of advice you'd offer to Sullivan County residents who might rely on health and family services to help them prepare or protect themselves just in case there is a lack of compromise here in this government shutdown?
Well, I'd say for the government shutdown and then looking beyond as well, you know, what we've seen from the One Big Beautiful Bill Act is that there are going to be increased checks, recertifications. So a lot of times these programs recertify on an annual basis. We're going to be mandated to go to 6-month recertifications. So it's really, we want to do what we can to make sure folks stay engaged with the system and aware of what's going on, because we don't want to see anybody who is entitled to benefits to lose access to benefits because of a lack of information or a lack of connectivity to us. So we definitely encourage folks at this time to stay connected with us, follow Sullivan County government on social media, listen into local radio and our newspapers, and just stay in tune with us, because it's going to be a turbulent time that we're headed for no matter how the federal government shutdown shakes out. But we want to make sure that people get the benefits to which they're entitled. And so that's how you can do it best, is stay in contact with us.
That's John Little, Commissioner of Health and Family Services for Sullivan County. John, thank you for joining us this morning.
Yep. Thanks, Tim.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington. This is Radio Chatskill.
Jake Sullivan served as national security advisor in the Biden White House. He says President Trump weakens U.S. leadership by not keeping his word in foreign affairs. So I asked Sullivan, hasn't that been the case with a lot of U.S. presidents?
Okay, I'll say two things about this. One, I did not expect the red line in Syria to come up tonight, of all things, but totally fair enough.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My conversation with Jake Sullivan is on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Hey there, Jason Dole here, asking you to help Radio Catskill kick off our fall fun drive in person at the Double Down on Radio Catskill event 2-5 Sunday afternoon at the Arnold House. Free admission, fun games for kids and adults, tunes by DJ Tikka Masala, delicious hors d'oeuvres, cash bar, and your chance to win great prizes from local businesses. It's Double Down on Radio Catskill Sunday afternoon at the Arnold House up on Chandelier in Livingston Manor. I'll see you there.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill, and it's Monday. It's Monday. Even Dolly's tired. It's time for a local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington, local economist and author. James B., good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
We were just talking about the government shutdown and how it's impacting local government here in Sullivan County. It's also impacting some other things. We were supposed to get a jobs report, but... didn't. Do we know when that might be available?
It will be available probably within a day or two of the time the shutdown ends. It's most likely they have their employment situation summary all ready to go. They just can't release it yet. It may have had a thing or two that needs checking or a little bit changes here and there, but these things are hardly suddenly written on the Friday mornings they're supposed to come out. So they are expecting, unlike some previous years, that it will be quick to come out, expecting about 50,000 net new non-farm positions, which is keeping with the last several months. In other words, less than the 5 years or so before that. Otherwise, unemployment may have ticked up 0.1%. Not very large differences, but as we know, it doesn't always match the estimates. So we will hang on and wait.
It seems like the labor market's just kind of plodding along, at least in September, according to some other reporting outside the government data. But when we're talking about the government shutdown, what's open and what's closed? I was trying to figure out if I was going to get my mail or not.
Yes, you will get your mail. That's on the top of the list here of my grouping of what's open during a government shutdown. Things that will continue as is are the U.S. Postal Service, Medicare, Social Security payments, air traffic control, banks, courts of all kinds, border security, disaster aid, everything done by federal law enforcement agencies, including the FBI, DEA, and prison staff, along with the Secret Service and Coast Guard, the military, everybody who is on active duty will stay on the job, although the civilian employees may or may not. Now, looking at what's closing, we have national parks may close. They're not yet. That may wait, say, another week if we still don't have any resolution here. Visitor centers and tours of federal buildings, including the Capitol, White House, and FBI building, are on hold. And the Smithsonian Museums could close also if the shutdown continues.
All right, let's talk about some local jobs information. First, let's talk about a local job fair that's happening next week. Where is that going to be?
Pike County. It's at the Pike County Career Center. It's on 837 Route 6, Unit 2 in Chihola. It's going to be from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and there will be at least 15 regional employers from a variety of industries. So get there on a week from Wednesday. That is the 15th. If you are looking, because they are hiring.
And New York State is actively hiring now for some civil service jobs. What are those jobs?
Yes, what I have here is, again, these people were at an outdoor festival, the one in Port Jervis, actually hawking job openings. What they have are correction officer trainee positions. They start at $53,000 and some at the beginnings, as a beginning salary. There's an English version, English speaking version, and a Spanish speaking version. If you're interested in these, the absolute requirements are you must be 21, you must have a high school graduation or a GED, you have to be a United States citizen, and you have to live in New York State. There is a lot to go through, such as a physical exam, drug testing, psychological evaluation, and other things, and determining if you can follow oral and written instructions and such. The good news is there is no processing fee. If they're interested enough to test you with these things, it won't cost you anything.
Well, from government shutdown uncertainty to other worldwide uncertainty, what is the tariff uncertainty projected to do to global economic growth this year?
Well, according to one forecast I hear from Liz Alderman in the New York Times, it's just, as of about 2 weeks ago, the global economy is forecast to lose 0.1% of growth, down from 3.3% to 3.2%, affected by the tariffs mainly. We have, in general, these costing trading partners like the European Union and China and India especially strong. Private consumption growth has already started to weaken. That means we're consuming more, but the graph is getting flatter. Economic momentum will be more than offset by higher tariff rates, as well as a drop in net immigration. It is quite possible the U.S. economy is going to slow way down later this year. 1.8% for the entire year, which means they're projecting it might go down to nothing for the last 3 months here, and down from 2.8% last year and 1.5% next year. So it will have an effect. It's not a huge effect, but when you look at our country and its growth, it's significant.
Let's talk about a global work trend that is starting to take root in some areas of U.S. tech companies something called the 996 work culture. What is that?
Yes. The idea is that some jobs are going to have expectations that you work from 9 to 9, 6 days a week. That's 72 hours. That's nothing shockingly unheard of in a lot of circles like law and some parts of technology, but it's coming up front as an expectation for certain positions. So you have to decide if you're willing to do that, and probably more important than anything else, make sure you're being paid enough one way or another to justify you're doing this, because it's not a small difference here. I've been in workplaces where they were management sort of postured to try to get people to work extra hours, but they didn't have any teeth because people were not required. In this case, if you sign on for something that you're told is a 996 job, that's just what it will be. So think it over. Could be worth it. Could be, well, the good news is I wouldn't think you'd have to work any hours on top of that. So it won't catch you by surprise. But yes, that's, you know, attributing it to things in China and the hustle culture. So it may be a trend, but I think it's a good thing in a way if they're being upfront about that. If they don't tell you anything like that, you can go with the idea that they're not expecting 72 hours a week.
Read the fine print. All right, let's talk about the fine print of the numbers. What were the stock, oil, precious metal, and crypto prices this morning, and how'd they change?
Over the past week, as of early this morning, gold was $39.42, up $123. It's all-time highs are getting higher and higher and more common. Silver, $48.63, jumped $1.73, and 90-some cents of that was in the last 24 hours. The ratio between the two is about 81 to 1, which is lower. Silver's been doing better than gold as a percentage basis. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 46,758, up 5.11 for a week, a good, very strong week with all-time highs here as well. Same thing at NASDAQ. Well, not quite. We were in the 24s a couple weeks ago, and NASDAQ were 22,780 plus 296 over the week. It's recovering slowly, but it's hasn't spent too many weeks above its value here, so it could easily get even a little higher. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, $61.91 the barrel, down $3.08. Good thing. The one thing we want to go down is the one that did go down. It gave back its $2 gain last week, and it's maybe getting out of the 60s if it has another week or two like this. Bitcoin, 123,874, plus over $11,000. That's a spectacular week for that, too. British pound, 1.3433, managed to break exactly even down to the 10,000th of a cent over the past week. Euro, 1.1665, down 55 hundredths of a cent. It's dollar-denominated things are doing so well, it makes sense to me that foreign currencies, especially first-world countries, are going to be going down. However, the Japanese 100 yen, 66 cents, dropped another penny. So overall, we really have the same question as we had this last week. How long can all this continue? There's more and more money out there, of course, but I've never seen in my memory a bull market this intense and this broad-based. Mm-hmm. So we don't know what will happen, but if you are invested, you should be quite happy.
All right, James B. Huntington, keeping an eye on all of it. He joins us on Mondays with Local Economic Perspective. James B., thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, Janice Adams, talk about the premiere of season 10 of her show, The Janice Adams Show, which is tonight. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Grizzly Bagels, small batch handmade New York style bagels in Roscoe, New York, grizzlybagels.com, and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Hi, I'm Janice Adams. Join me tonight at 8 after Laura Flanders and Friends and Trailer Talk for The Janice Adams Show on our new night and time. For 9 years, the show has brought you conversations with public figures you want to know more about and neighbors from whom you hear too little. Join me tonight at 8 for The Janice Adams Show, only on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, there you heard it. The Janice Adams Show has its premiere on a new night and time tonight at 8 on Radio Catskill. It's season 10 of The Janice Adams Show. And I caught up with Janice on Friday to talk about that and a preview of tonight's show. Season 10 of The Janice Adams Show on Radio Catskill. Can you believe it?
Wow. No, I can't. But it's been an extraordinary time, and in many ways an extraordinary time. We began the very first programs I did were about the oncoming election that would bring the first Trump administration into office. And now we are.
Mm-hmm. And your season 10 opener is tonight at a new time at 8. And you're talking about photographers. Now, you've talked to master photographers over the years. Talk a little bit about some of the folks you've talked to.
Yes. I mean, on the show, the show is a show that I always say is about race, every race, and courage. And so we have had really an amazing range of people. In the case of these photographers, Chester Higgins, a dean among contemporary photographers, he really is extraordinary. He gives us a guided tour of his decades-long quest in search of the Sacred Nile. And then we also had Josue Rivas, who is an indigenous person. He is Mexica and Otomi. And he embedded with the standing demonstrators. And he gives us an inside view of his really photo evidence book award winning with World Press Photo. He was given that honor for the work that he did being embedded at Standing Rock in the book that was produced. So we've had a range of people, a range of images, whether sound images or photographic images. And this season opener, we're kind of picking up on this theme of our imagery and the stories we tell.
What sparked this episode?
Well, you know, with all that is going on, three headlines just kind of collided that made this extremely timely. One is the administration's attacks on Black history and its depiction in museums. Another is domestic terrorism against historically Black colleges and universities. And today's episode is about one of those historically Black colleges and universities. I mean, it is a long tradition, unfortunately, we have of historically long tradition of attacks on Black churches. And this is taking a new turn over the past few years with attacks on Black colleges, physical attacks where terrorist calls are called in and the students have to suddenly lock down and all of that. It's amazing. And then on the upside, we have Mackenzie Scott's $70 million grant to the United Negro College Fund, UNCF, an 81-year-old organization. So if anyone wonders why
it still uses that name. It's because of the, it's the legacy name, UNCF. But $70 million she gave to their new capital campaign. And the UNCF is the largest private donor of scholarships to students, and the member network of 37 HBCUs. So it's really quite a thing. And thinking of those things together made me say, yes, this is the opener for this season. I'm calling the show Erasing Erasure, Getty Images, Claflin Universities, and the Stories We Tell.
Let's listen to a clip then of that show, which is tonight at 8.
How do we know who we are? What are the stories we tell to make us whole? Today on this episode of The Janice Adams Show, we're talking about the importance of imagery, remembrance, and the stories we tell with our guests, Cassandra Illich of Getty Images and Marcus H. Burgess of Claflin University. Getty Images, memory keepers. Perusing their images is like turning the pages of the scrapbook of our collective lives. There we are in living color, the proof of what we've done and become in black and white.
My father, growing up, he always didn't want my brothers and I to get a low haircut. So he never let us, they didn't want us to get fades. We grew our hair out. There are pictures of me when I was young, nice little afro. But to see him on campus, see pictures of him when he was online and after he crossed with his tight fade and his sweaters on. And I'm like, wait a minute, you didn't want us to do this, but look at you, Mr. Cool. So for lack of a better phrase, they were some cool cats. I mean, these guys were dressed and impressed. And so fast forward now when we talk with students about, you know, you're in college, you know, so the expectation was to be a college student on the campus of Claflin University, you know, having that Claflin confidence that we preach. It reminds me of how when we weren't taught by the folks who were the keeper of the history, when we lost some of that, our HBCUs were able to bring that back. So it was just good to see the transitioning of how we dressed during those times.
The story of who we are and where we've been and how we've become.
Yes.
And come to think about it, and how we've overcome. Cassandra?
The fashion sense is what I kind of gravitated towards, dating back to the 1800s with the suits and the ties. And there's a amazing photo that I found, and it was actually with Jackson State. It was a panoramic. And I found it, and we're finding panoramics at each one of the universities. And it's these group photos of just the attire and minks and pearls and just beauty. And then in the classroom, you know, it's rare to see photos of the Black community in classrooms being taught by a Black educator. And so that just brings joy. It wasn't making me laugh, but it just brought joy to see those photos.
Brought a serious smile
mm-hmm.
to your face. So where do we go from here? And what can we expect to see from this initiative?
Well, our hope is to work with all HBCUs at some point. You know, we have the four grant recipients. We're spending a lot of time with them, nurturing the program, working closely with the archivists and the photographers on site, and exploring these archives. And we're taking our time to really make sure that the photos are handled with care. We're teaching students to actually preserve this history and to learn about it, to do the research, to understand everything about the photos so that they can be documented correctly with the right dates and time frame and some context.
And Dr. Marcus Burgess, from your standpoint, what's next for you? What are you hoping that this will mean in terms of the legacy and the imagery and future of Claflin?
The digitization of these pictures is going to help preserve this history for others to learn about when none of us are still here. So it allows us, this process allows Claflin to secure its place in history from a digital perspective. It allows us to be able to tell that story and have it told through the story of pictures. It's given our students, who many of them are history majors, a sense of purpose. It has made our librarians feel that the fact that they keep all the archives that, you know, many people don't need it until you need it, right? And so now to be able to have a space where we can grab our pictures from now until is an amazing. We're so thankful to Getty and Cassandra and her team for bringing this to us, allowing us to have this opportunity to be able to preserve our history.
The Janice Adams Show, Season 10, Launch Edition. And on the Launch Edition, Janice, you have something special, a bonus, a 10th anniversary top 10 list. We're going David Letterman on us here.
It is tied into this show, Erasing Erasure, but it's 10 things everyone should know about the pictures we make and the stories we tell. And that pictures we make actually comes from the veteran photographer we've featured before, Chester Higgins. He never refers to taking pictures. He refers to making pictures. And indeed, Josue Rivas refers to it the same way. What pictures mean, they don't take pictures. They both say they make pictures, which is an interactive kind of thing. So that's the title of this bonus listener's guide, Erasing Erasure, 10 things everyone should know about the pictures we make and the stories we tell. And in that special guide, we've got show notes that are not going to be on my site, and also some of the photos that are mentioned in detail in this week's episode, in tonight's episode of the Janice Adams Show.
And you can get that listener's guide at janiceadams.com. While we have you, I want to ask you about this really amazing, bold, new program that you're working on, Harriet Tubman's A Way Out of No Way Day. Tell us more about that.
Yes, it is a mouthful, but we're going through so much these days that I knew we needed it. A Way Out of No Way is a traditional African-American phrase about doing the impossible. When everybody tells you there's no way, you can't do, especially when they tell you you can't do it, or there's nothing you can do, and it will never happen. The tradition is to dig deep and say, I'm going to make a way out of no way. Therefore, I looked at something that I had realized from my own research, that Harriet Tubman, we don't think about beyond her extraordinary life in rescuing herself and then helping others escape, what she did for the rest of her life. One of the things she did was to train other people in how to make a living and a life to sustain themselves with their talents, skills, and earning their own money. That's the root of Harriet Tubman's A Way Out of No Way Day. We're going to be joined by Harriet Tubman's descendant, Rita Daniels. She is the author of a new book about her great-great-great-grand-aunt, and she is going to just be having that presence is just going to be amazing for this program to bring that legacy forward. I must say as well that I personally was privileged to meet this woman's aunt, so the generation right before, when years ago when I was doing my children's On Location series, and I spent a day with this woman's aunt, Harriet Tubman's great-great-grandniece, the generation before, Gladys Bryant.
And what was so extraordinary about that day with Gladys Bryant is that it was the one time that I had taken my own daughters on location with our crew. And she pulled out a picture of herself as a seven-year-old at the funeral of Harriet Tubman in 1913. So we're saying, wait a minute. I'm actually talking, it's shake the hand that shook the hand. I'm actually shaking the hand of someone who, as a little girl, sat on Harriet Tubman's lap.
Wow. It's amazing.
This is crazy in terms of time. So I felt with that experience and that legacy to my daughters, that gift to my daughters, Tubman has always been so important to me in terms of what she not only did for herself, but her outreach to others, her dedication to others. In one extraordinary 7-week period, she does the impossible. She makes a way out of no way. It is 1896, a time very much like our own. Our era's Supreme Court decision ending affirmative action and attacking women's personal rights is the Plessy versus Ferguson decision of 1896 that launched segregation, that the civil rights movement had to come into existence to counteract. That's the context. And so she's seeing, much like we are today, people going unhoused, people, the health care, sound familiar, being in jeopardy. Many are going without food. We have one in five children in the United States, I believe, right now, is food insecure. That's crazy. 1896 was the precursor to this. And in that moment, much like our own, she gets word that a 25-acre property is about to come up for auction. She's nearing 80. Yes, she's world-renowned, but she's also broke because our government has been nickel and diming her out of two pensions that she is literally entitled, not literally, but actually entitled to, one as a widow, and the second because she was a hero of the Civil War as well. Amazing. And she's being nickel and dimed out of everything. But she decides that when that property goes up for auction in 7 weeks, she's going to win, have the winning bid. How she does it is extraordinary. And using her own entrepreneurial genius. And so when I looked at that, I said, that is what we need to know right now. These are critical times for families in the United States, made even more critical just this week. How are they going to do in a limited period of time, be able to turn their lives around and secure themselves? That's what Harriet Tubman's A Way Out of No Way Day is about and for.
She really was a model for resilience and survival. Where can folks get more information about the Way Out of No Way Day?
It has its own website, wayoutofnoway.info. Wayoutofnoway.info. And all the information is there.
That's Janice Adams, an Emmy Award-winning journalist, historian, and author of 11 books, and host of The Janice Adams Show, which kicks off Season 10 tonight at 8. It's new time. Janice, thank you so much, and congratulations on Season 10.
Thank you. I can't believe it.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, cellist Alex Prisgintis and his expanding musical footprint across the Hudson Valley. This is Radio Chatskill.
The course of true love never did run smooth. Shakespeare wrote those words hundreds of years ago, and they still ring true today. I'm Shankar Vedantam, host of Hidden Brain. Join me for Love 2.0, a new series featuring ideas that will make your relationship the stuff of great literature or just help it to run a little more smoothly. That's Love 2.0 on Hidden Brain all this month.
Listen to Hidden Brain at its new time today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Cellist Alex Prinskintas is known for transforming his electric cello into a full orchestra of sound. He's back this month with two brand new shows, including a Sinatra tribute and a deep dive into the sounds of Woodstock 69. He's here along with Classical Kit to talk about it all. Good morning to you both.
Good morning. Hey,
Good
Alex.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I want to talk about the Sinatra program first, because that's tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the Ellenville Public Library at 40 Center Street in Ellenville. And I'm really curious about the fact that you've been drawn to Sinatra, because you're a pretty young guy. And, you know, Sinatra's era was like the 30s to the mid 90s. You know, so you probably didn't grow up listening to Sinatra. Am I correct?
I did growing up listening to Sinatra. Not necessarily know him personally. I'm a little too young for that to have ever seen him live in a show. His music has always been, as you might say, very relatable to the cello. For one, his tenor range fits particularly, I should say, even beautifully well into the cello. And although this program itself is brand new, actually it's just about a month old, we've run it a few times, his music does bridge over into several of the other shows that I do, so it was very natural to develop this new program, which features several of his noted great hits, as well as some deep dives into history, showcasing for instance his interpretations on other genres of music, whether it be a rock and roll in some cases, which depending on the time of his life was either rather negative or increasingly in positive. We enjoy in particular showing the relationship sometimes at odds between Sinatra and the Beatles throughout time.
Well, you know, I'm thinking the fact that you use all of your effects to get a big sound might make those Nelson Riddle arrangements that Sinatra used something that you would really be interested in exploring.
Yes, and when working with Sinatra, it's a little bit more complicated, as you might say, with the tools, because unlike a, you know, 60s or 70s British invasion rock and roll piece, which has a guitar riff that can be looped on my looping station, Sinatra selections are far more lyrically based. So there are a few pieces on the program that are very much, you might say, as a literal performance, using in some cases the extracted audio recordings from Nelson Riddle arrangements or even Count Basie's orchestra. In other cases, though, you will see me actively use the looping station. I lay down a bass track, and that allows me just to very, as you might say, elegantly yet simply perform the main melody. And then from there, I'll go into more of a jazz style to improvise over that melody. That works well on a few pieces I share, such as Fly Me to the Moon or The Best Is Yet to Come. I also do use particularly the effect pedals in the case of the Sinatra program. My delay pedal allows me to amplify the sound in terms of reverberation, which is very much crucial when you're attempting to emulate the voice of Sinatra.
Well, that sounds like it's going to be a very interesting program and kind of a departure from some of the other ones we've talked about. Your Woodstock 1969 program, you're going to be performing that at the Otisville Sanctuary in Otisville, which it's kind of a new venue to me. It was originally a Methodist church, and now it's a nonprofit, you know, arts and music center. I imagine the acoustics there are quite different from what they are when you're playing in small spaces and libraries. So I'm wondering if you're playing all of these, you know, classic late 60s rock and roll things there with your equipment, if you get a much bigger sound playing it in a space like that.
You most definitely do. This is my second time working with the sanctuary. They are a wonderful group of people there who lead, as you said, this beautifully restored in progress Methodist church right on Highland Avenue. And it's an event space where they hold many different arts-related events, whether it be concerts. They do poetry reading nights. And the space is rather different, and it's a much larger venue than some of the libraries I work with. It also, in addition, allows me more or less to really expand the range of the cello. It's why, for these events, I have to arrive in some cases an hour in advance to simply test the sound to ensure that in some cases it's not literally overwhelming, but it is very much an immersive experience, which is what I enjoy reverberating in these shows.
So tell us a little bit about which of the artists from Woodstock you're going to be including. We've got about 3 minutes left, so you could give us kind of an outline of that.
Absolutely. So in this case, the Woodstock program, we enjoy highlighting some, of course, the major acts of Woodstock. This can include anything from Joe Cocker with his covers of With a Little Help from My Friends and It's Gonna Be All Right, Joan Baez with We Shall Overcome, Janis Joplin, and in other cases, we enjoy discussing some of the acts that may not have appeared at Woodstock. We actually have a bit of a script. These shows do incorporate both history and harmonies, we like to call it. So we have a bit of a discussion about some of the bands that did not appear at Woodstock and individuals. This can include groups such as Led Zeppelin, Joni Mitchell, of course. We actually conclude the show with Joni Mitchell with her song Woodstock. Other bands that didn't appear included Spirit in one case, Jethro Tull. So it's a wide range of music from that era, showcasing its history, which in certain cases is connected directly to Woodstock, and in other cases comes from either a bit before that era and was incorporated into that show.
Well, yeah, 1969 was such a key year for music, and I love that you're branching out and not just playing the usual there. So I just want to make sure that people know how to get more information about these concerts. I know that you have your website, but there's also the website for the library, EPLM.org, for the Ellenville Library, for tomorrow's performance. And it's often a good idea to go on those websites and see if they want you to pre-register because of limited space. But for the Otisville show, that's coming up Friday night, October 10th at 6:30. Do you recommend that people call in advance or anything if they want to come?
I don't believe the sanctuary has registration. However, they do have a website. I think it's OtisvilleSams, SAMS.org, where there should be information. In addition, there is also, for those on social media, a very active Facebook group for the Otisville Sanctuary. And on that group, you will find listings for all their events, including the upcoming show on Friday at 6:30.
Well, thank you so much for letting us know about that and perhaps introducing our listeners to a venue that they haven't gone to before. And we always appreciate your taking the time to talk to us.
I appreciate the time you give, as well as other artists in the region. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alex, and thank you, Classical Kit.
You're very welcome.
And before we go, a reminder that we have some new shows debuting this week. Today at 1, it's the Capitol Press Room. It's a daily program with the latest insight and analysis from the New York State Capitol with host Dave Lombardo, broadcast from the Legislative Correspondents Association Press Room in Albany. It'll feature interviews with state representatives and important newsmakers. That's at 1 o'clock, followed by Hidden Brain at 2. And as we told you earlier, the Janis Adams Show, Season 10, debuts tonight at 8. It's new time. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year. NACL.org, and from listeners like you.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, what does it take to be an air traffic controller?
Controllers are creative people. We find solutions that work.
And how far will $12 billion in new spending go toward fixing our aging aviation infrastructure?
It's a down payment on things that we should be doing.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tomorrow at 2 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Sunny and very warm today. This unusually dry weather continues today. An elevated fire risk. Again, that statewide burn ban in New York goes through the 15th of the month. High 77, clear tonight, low 54. Expect some showers, though, tomorrow evening. And more seasonable temperatures.